news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast. Are the Ordinary the Big Ball Broadcast?
Ah, ha, 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 ha. Ah, ha, 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 ha. So that's, you know, coming along. I'm working with a vocal coach, strengthening the...
Now here comes your host, Kyle Abaron of the World Team.
Welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast, episode 84, ladies and gentlemen. All the geeky news you can use, movies, games, tech, randomness. This is our third year, folks, our three-year anniversary. And as time goes on, we keep on broadcasting less frequently due to real-life constraints. But such is life. Part of thegeekmedia.com. This is the Big Ball Broadcast. My name is Kyle Hebert. I'm an L.A.-based anime and video game voice actor.
And this is your co-host, Otherworld Steve. And I'm in the awesome kick-ass band Perimeter of the Void.
Yes, you are. You can buy their new CD, Dust, available right now from eberecords.com. Have you been selling lots of those?
Oh, millions. I think millions. We just hit like triple platinum.
Oh, awesome. Okay. So you're ready to retire then?
Ready to. I already have.
Oh, of course. You're sitting in your mansion now.
No, on a serious note, I would like to thank the listeners of the Big Ball Broadcast that have purchased the CD. Thank you so much. And those of you who haven't, I encourage you to do so.
I know you're busy being a dad and you're adjusting to your new work schedule. Have you had time to record any new stuff?
No, I have made a rather significant change in my work schedule. I'm working days now as opposed to overnights. I'm management now. And the other big part of Perimeter of the Void, he's been working out of state for the last couple months. But we are planning. We're gearing towards that. We have new material. We just haven't got together to actually record yet. But very soon.
Nice. Yeah, I've been busy on my end, too. I recently moved into a two-bedroom apartment because my daughter has just moved out here full-time with me, which was the goal all along when I moved to L.A. So I'm very, very happy to have her here, although my rent has practically doubled. But the good news about that is I have been booking a lot of gigs, been doing a lot of games, doing a lot of anime, but the games are always better because they're a bigger payday. I get to be on a lot of really cool projects that I can't talk about just yet, but one of them I can, actually. By the time you hear this, Gurren Lagann will be premiering on Sci-Fi Channel. You can watch that each and every Monday on Anna Mondays at 11 Eastern and Pacific Time. I voice Kamina on that, and I've got some other cool game projects that are really big, but I can't announce those just yet. So
you can tell me, and I won't tell anybody else.
Confidentiality agreements be damned, right? I'll just tell you off mic.
Damn it. I tried, people.
Ah, well, okay. This episode of the Big Ball Broadcast, we're going to talk about The Dark Knight because, you know, Batman's kind of popular. We're going to talk about Indiana Jones because it's been a while since we've had a show, and we have both seen Indiana Jones, the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and Steve is actually going to give his input on that. I'm going to give my input on The Dark Knight. I got myself an iPhone 3G. I'll tell you about my adventures in line. Cowboy Bebop actually going live action. Believe it or not, folks, we've got the news on that. We've got tidbits on Star Wars because what is a podcast without Star Wars news, right? And some upcoming movie sequels you didn't know about. All this and whatever the hell else we feel like throwing in here on the Big Ball Broadcast. First of all, let's check our inbox at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. This first one comes from Izzy from London, Ontario, Canada. He says, "Hey, Kyle and Otherworld. I'm a new listener to the broadcast. This is due to my excessive listenings of Voice Print with Trevor Duvall. In basically every episode, you are advertised. So I thought, hey, why not? If Trevor can stand it, I can too. I think the broadcast is awesome, radical, wicked, and absolutely drenched with superior geek info. Kudos. Perimeter of the Void has come out with some pretty sick music, and you dudes should keep it up. Just thought I would throw that in for Steve. Can't wait for the next one."
Yay! We're huge in Canada.
All right, up in Canada, eh? So yeah, that's very cool, Izzy. Thank you very much. We're glad you like the show. Make sure and spread the love. Tell all your friends to come to kyleabaron.com or bigballbroadcast.blogspot.com, and you can actually subscribe via iTunes. You can actually open up iTunes, type in the Big Ball Broadcast on the podcast directory, and it'll come right up. You can subscribe, and it'll download automatically. And that's a cool thing. A lot of people, though, just like going to the webpage, which is cool because you get to see the show notes and all the extra links we throw in, so all the little goodies there. Moving on, here is a email from Masako, who says, "It's Masako from the DBZ Abridged Movies." Sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. Maybe it's Masako. I was wondering if I could ask something of you. I remember hearing you were offering to air promos for anime goods, services, podcasts, etc., and I got something in the pipeline that might be appropriate. I, along with a couple of fellow abridgers, are starting a new podcast called The Anime Counterpoint, where we discuss less obvious topics in anime today and hope to give a new outlook to current fans. We're based at animecounterpoint.blogspot.com, where the podcast will be updated regularly. Is it all right if we could air our promo on your podcast, please? I'll include it in this email so you can have a listen. The first topic we'll be discussing is there too much fan service in anime? Thanks very much. Hope you guys are well. All right. Well, hey, we have no problem promoting your podcast. Here's the little rule of thumb, though. I'm going to send you our promo in the email. So if anyone listens to the Anime Counterpoint podcast, bust their balls if they don't play a Big Ball Broadcast promo, okay? No, we're going to send it to you. So if you play our promo, we'll play yours. And I'm going to do my little gesture here. We're going to play your promo right now, as a matter of fact, so the Big Ball Broadcast audience can check out Anime Counterpoint the podcast.
I already told you, man. Rei Ayandami is the hottest anime character ever.
Oh, please, hello? Fifi from Code Geass is so much hotter. Give it the time.
Gee, never. I hate you.
Quit being such a noob. Gah.
Hey, calm down there, campers. I think I've got something you should take a listen to.
There's more to anime than just who's hotter than who.
That's why we at the Anime Counterpoint aim to discuss less obvious topics in anime and offer you a new outlook on your favorite genre.
And you have a chance to join us in the debate. Simply send us your questions and comments to animecounterpoint@googlemail.com, and we'll bring your thoughts to the table.
Join me, Masako X.
Myself, Kaiser Neko.
And I, HBI2K.
For the Anime Counterpoint at animecounterpoint.blogspot.com. Look forward to hearing from you.
You know, I'm thinking the first podcast for them is going to be really short. You know, is it too much fan service in anime? The obvious answer is, of course not. So, I mean, that's like a 10-second podcast.
There's a lot of fan service in Gurren Lagann, let me tell you. Yeah. No, that's cool. That's actually it's a cute little promo. It's clever. It's fun. I'm interested in seeing what the answer is and see who chimes in with that. So, cool. AnimeCounterpoint.blogspot.com to check out those guys' podcast. And guys, check your email soon. I'll be sending you our promo so you can pump our show. Moving on, Patrice Steele in Miami writes, I have to admit, Kirsten Dunst wasn't my cup of tea to play MJ in the first place in the Spider-Man films, but somehow in the first movie she won me over. In the second, she was okay. In the third, I thought, what the hell is she doing? If there's going to be a Spidey 4, I do not wish for Dunst's return. I suggest the actress Sophia Bush, who plays Brooke on One Tree Hill. She should play Mary Jane. Her voice may be scratchy, but Sophia's got the look and her attitude of MJ in the comics. Her character from One Tree Hill sometimes reminds me of MJ. What do you think, Kyle and Otherworld Steve? Patrice, I've never seen One Tree Hill. I think that's a chick show, and I'm not a chick. So I couldn't tell you. I don't know who Sophia Bush is.
No, sadly, neither do I. The one thing that I can keep harping about is, yeah, I think the whole series needs a big facelift, literally and figuratively. I think they need to recast all the main roles. And, yeah, let's boot Raimi out while we're at it, too.
So who would you give it to? Do you have any director in mind that you think would be in good hands?
Let's see, who's directing the Batman relaunch?
Christopher Nolan, who should be directing every movie, yeah.
Every comic movie, sure, you know.
Or Zack Snyder. We'll talk about Watchmen, too, because that trailer's just, like, eye-gasm. As far as One Tree Hill goes, I'm sorry, neither of us know who Sophia Bush is. And speaking as a man, I'm sure we're going, hey, is she hot? All right.
Of course.
But can
I'm
she
like, ooh,
act,
Megan you know? Fox for MJ, yeah, you know.
Right, exactly. There we go. Perfect. I don't know if anyone out there thinks that Sophia Bush or who do you guys think would be a good MJ in Spidey 4? Because you know they're going to do it. And I don't know if they're going to try and lure the same old cast back or even get Sam Raimi back behind the camera again. I guess money talks, because the third one, as poorly received as it was, still made the most money. Go fig.
You know, it's that whole Star Wars prequel curse thing. You can release really subpar and even poor movies and have them make tons of everything that came before it. And the Spider-Man franchise certainly echoes that. You know, the movies got worse as the franchise went on, and just for some reason ended up making more money as the franchise went on. I'm just scratching my head. You know, but as I've said numerous times, even Marvel Comics has admitted that comic book sales only accounts for 10% of their annual revenue. So when they make these comic-based movies, they're kind of counting on the fact that you haven't had a relationship with these characters throughout your childhood and you're going in fresh, and that's probably why it's making as much money as it is.
Maybe so. And I've talked about this on previous episodes that, you know, the changes they make don't really bug me as much. I wasn't as hardcore of a comic book fan. The only thing that really kind of bugged me in a comic book movie was the first Batman with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson, where they made Jack Nicholson the killer of Bruce Wayne's parents. I thought that was like the most hugest leap the hugest change that just kind of was so jarring to me. It's like wow, if Joker died, spoiler, at the end of the 1989 movie, his whole reason for being Batman is just, you know.
Well, I mean, I don't know. When you talk about the existing Batman franchise, the pre-existing franchise, you just kind of have to shake your head. Ironically, I was at work a couple days ago, and they showed the last two, you know, of course, climaxing with Batman and Robin. And to hold back the vomit in my mouth, it's a feat of bewilderment.
Yeah, George Clooney, head bob. Yeah, not working. Nipples, bat suit, Batgirl, wrong. Mr. Freeze, yeah. Arnold, ouch.
Bane with the painted on veins. It was just an abysmal movie.
Yeah, but talk about relaunching a franchise. You know, we talked about Batman Begins when it came out. You were a latecomer to seeing it. You saw it on DVD first, and you were impressed. And you're a hard sell, my friend.
I was blown away, and I think it's what's pretty much brought a lot of people to the whole allure of the relaunch, and that's the fact that, you know, and even you commented, I noticed, on, I believe, on your MySpace, everything's so grounded in reality. You're watching this movie, and you're going in the back of your mind, damn, this could really happen, and it doesn't do anything to suspend your disbelief either. I think it's very well grounded, and it's a very serious take, and has a very serious tone without being too overwhelming. You know, it's not like X-Files-ish. Yeah, I mean, this new movie, Dark Knight, has certainly really set the bar for comic movies. We thought, you know, just a month or two ago, Iron Man set the bar, and everyone is looking at Iron Man and how superhero movies should be made, and then here comes Batman, just blew that thing right out of the water.
Yeah, and the Dark Knight definitely earns its title because it's pretty damn dark. The Chris Nolan franchise now with Batman Begins and now The Dark Knight, these are very adult, you know, from teen to adult. It's going to appeal to them. If you're an 8-year-old kid, you're probably going to either fall asleep or be profoundly disturbed. I can't imagine being a little kid and actually embracing these movies because they're aimed at an older audience. And for us, that's great. They're finally doing that in the studio. You know, thank God Warner Brothers got some, you know, had a lucid moment and thought, wow, we should let this guy do what he wants and not interfere and not say, hey, let's change this to make it more mainstream. Let's do this so we can make a toy out of it. Now, yeah, there's a Tumblr toy, and yeah, there's a whole action figure line of whatever. But on the whole, though, you've got this whole atmosphere, this whole world, again, as you said, grounded in reality. And that's the thing that makes the Joker's performance so disturbing. Heath Ledger, I mean, the reviews, just like you've heard, are just amazing. This guy, you know, rest in peace, Heath Ledger, but man, what a way to go. This performance is so creepy, so well performed, that it just blows Nicholson's thing out of the water. Now, I think, to be fair, if the script were right, and maybe, you know, 50, 60 pounds lighter, maybe Nicholson back in 89 could have made a truly scary, creepy Joker, if the script befit that, because he was scary in The Shining, you know? You can make Jack Nicholson scary, but Tim Burton's take was completely polar opposite of what Chris Nolan is doing here in this film. And again, you've got, you know, great performances. Of course, Christian Bale looks like he was just born to play Batman. You've got Maggie Gyllenhaal, who takes over Katie Holmes' role and does a really good job. I don't think she's as cute as Katie Holmes, but I mean, I thought her performance was better. And you got Harvey Dent, of course, and that is as spoilerific as I'm going to get. Commissioner Gordon. You got Jim Gordon in there again. You got Gary Oldman. And again, some fantastic action sequences. The script moves at a very tight pace. Even though it's 2.5 hours, it may be a tad long, but really, you've got these magnetic performances, things that go on screen that look like they were ripped right out of the Killing Joke graphic novel or something. Like, this story is like one of the best Batman stories ever told, and it really does live up to the hype. So if you had a chance to stand in a long line and see it in IMAX, I'm going to this weekend. I couldn't do it today because all the damn showings are sold out until Sunday. But, you know, by the time this is up, I will have seen it in IMAX, and I'll just be like, oh, my gosh, it's great. So, I got to say, Dark Knight has really, really set the bar for superhero movies, just like Iron Man did earlier. Completely different tone, though. This is so much darker, but nonetheless brilliant.
You said Killing Joke, and it just gave me shivers down my spine. One of Brian Bolland's best work, I think. But speaking about all the hype with the new Batman flick, you know, already the fan demand for an Oscar for Heath Ledger is just overwhelming. You can't hit a social networking site without finding multiple headlines regarding that. And if warranted, I say, hey, why not? But Christian Bale, I guess from what I was reading on Dig earlier, may be out of the running for an Oscar. You know, apparently when you allegedly beat up your mother and your sister and end up getting arrested and taken to the police station, it kind of hurts your Oscar chances.
Yeah, then you show up in Spain for the premiere of your movie, and you kind of have a serious look on your face, and the press is mum about it, and they don't want to really talk. And like, awkward!
Yeah.
A little bit strange. But yeah, about Heath Ledger, I don't want to go on and on and on about it, because everyone keeps talking about how great Heath Ledger is in this movie, but I can say I felt that I was watching a character and not Heath Ledger playing the role. And it's not just because he had clown makeup on. This guy really became this sinister, dark, creepy, calm character. He had his wits about him so much of the time that it's not the over-the-top laughing maniacally all the time. Yeah, that high-pitched laugh, the trademark laugh, is there, but it's not as much as like in the Nicholson performance where everything is a punchline. Everything he's saying is very starkly serious and disturbing. And it's like, this guy is just bent, and it's just magnetic again. I mean, wow.
So would you jump into the fray and throw in your nod for Ledger for the Oscar as well?
Oh, hell yeah. To quote Will Smith. Yes, absolutely. Just like I think Will Smith should be up for the Oscar in I Am Legend. And I know a lot of people are split on that movie, but I friggin' love that movie. I don't care what anyone says. His performance in that is Oscar worthy. Heath Ledger, the same. A posthumous, posthumous, is that how you say that word? I guess the word saying you're dead, but you're going to get an Oscar. Yeah, I think
I keep calling it most humorous.
Most humorous. Yes, that would be good for the Joker. Yes.
Yes.
But cool.
Dead Ledger.
Yeah. Oh, ouch. Oh, ooh, my. Yeah, so I'll be seeing the movie again. And Steve, you loved the first one, and hopefully, you know, this one is gonna knock your socks off too, because it's doing it to everyone else.
We were chatting briefly off mic, and I said, I've stayed entirely spoiler free with this movie, which, you know, anybody who's listened to the podcast at all in the last 3 years knows I'm the first one to jump into the spoilers and, you know, downloading workprint copies and everything. But this one, I don't know anything really going into it. I know that the Joker's in it, as you so eloquently pointed out to me. And that's
oh,
about
no!
it. Damn, he blew it.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And there's toys. There's bat toys. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Well, you know, and again, too, I really have to nod my hat to Warner Brothers, because with Ledger's passing, they said it would be kind of inappropriate to inundate the public with tons of merchandise at the launch, you know, of course, because Joker being the main reason a lot of people are going to see this flick. Anyway, like, buy this T-shirt, buy this hat, buy this action figure. So, you know, even at a chance to make tons more revenue on top of what the film's taking in, I'm glad they kind of took that step back and said, you know, let's be respectful about how we market this film.
Yeah, and I mean, the movie just sold itself. It made what, 155? It made more than Spider-Man 3, so it's like the biggest opening weekend ever, the biggest midnight opening ever. probably the biggest sales in IMAX opening weekend ever.
I mean, yeah, taking the midnight from Star Wars, that in and of itself is pretty impressive. Let's do a total 180 and talk about the much less impressive. And let's delve into Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull for a little bit.
Yes, let's.
I'm an emotional wreck right now, somewhere in between wanting to laugh maniacally and start bawling like a little girl. You and I both, you know, we grew up with Indiana Jones. It was the next serial film series after Star Wars. And of course, having Harrison Ford in the lead, an amazing crossover for young and impressionable males. So I kind of went into this with a few spoilers, nothing huge. I wasn't prepared for the ending at all. I mean, they really pushed campy to the extreme. It kind of reminded me of the 1966 Batman film to some degree. I think what I found most disappointing about the film is that Mutt, Shia LaBeouf, actually kind of carried the film more than Harrison Ford did in both the leading role capacity and the comic relief capacity, and I found that really disturbing. But nowhere near disturbing as CG monkeys.
And ants?
The ants, while that entire scene was, I guess, comical, unintentionally comical, the monkeys just, I think, were much more creepy and disturbing. It just screamed CG. It was that appalling, that jarring. But the end, wow, that's something for the record books. I really won't spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it at this point, but that was unexpected and certainly not in a positive way. They kind of gave a little tease at the end, like they were setting up a next one with the Buff and the Reins and had a little twist to the ending. And man, I hope they just put the franchise to bed now. I mean, they should have after Last Crusade, after seeing this thing. Even after the money it generated, you know, I say, wow, you know, Spielberg and Lucas, you guys really lucked out in making some last minute cash, but lay this puppy to rest now.
I know you and I don't agree on a lot of films, but I know we're seeing eye to eye on this one. I watched that movie and my initial reaction was, this is silly. This is just silly. It's just wrong. It feels so wrong. It was great to see Karen Allen again, but yeah, Harrison Ford seemed to be kind of phoning it in. Yeah, I don't know. It was just a very not by the book. What am I trying to say? I don't know. It's just it's
very
so over the top. Yeah, yeah. It's like, let's take something ludicrously over the top. Now, George Lucas will probably argue that it's like, well, this is supposed to be like a 1950s B movie. It's like, well, wow. I don't know.
I've seen B movies with more heart than this, you know.
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of what I'm saying, and that may even be your sentiment too, is you don't feel the heart in it. That this was an excuse to go and cash a paycheck. You don't feel a passion in there. You know, you have two cinematic masters coming together and culminating in something that should be awe-inspiring, but okay, they tried to be serious, but it came off being really campy and silly, but so campy and silly that you wouldn't laugh. So I think it just left a lot of people in the audience scratching their heads.
Yeah, I like the Russian psychic chick, and I thought the green screen effects actually looked pretty convincing, but there was a overuse of CG, and just, I don't know. A lot of the lines kind of fell flat, and certainly a lot of the action going on was just like, I tell a lot of my friends that this movie is just jam-packed with, oh, come on, moments, you know, where you just keep saying that over and over again.
I think even simple elements like set design were lacking. I keep thinking primarily of the first cemetery scene, and it didn't look cinematographic. It looked like somebody was filming a scene from, like, the Broadway musical from Cats. It was, like, more stage design than set design.
Yeah, we're on a sound stage, and, oh, look, ninjas! It's like, oh no, ninjas on Indiana Jones. What next? Oh, ants and monkeys.
And the end again. Can't say enough about the end.
Yeah. Wow.
If you CG to the extreme, cop out ending. I don't know. I can't even go there.
This one kind of makes Temple of Doom look like a masterpiece.
You know, if I had to reorganize my collection into watching priority or watching preference, of course, it'd be Raiders, then Last Crusade. Then I think, yes, Temple of Doom, and then this one here.
Yeah, because Raiders truly isn't a class by itself. The sequels fell so far below the bar that, I mean, well, the bar was truthfully set so high with that film. that it's like Raiders. There's Raiders, and then there's the Indiana Jones movies in my mind.
Right. Raiders, and oh yes, those other, they're kind of like Jaws, and well, just about everything that has a sequel.
Pretty much, yeah. That rare exception being Batman, where the relaunch is actually 3,000 times better.
Well, you know, and I guess the same for Empire Strikes Back as well.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Which is probably the best film of all time.
I struggle going back and forth between the original Star Wars A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back, because Star Wars was that first kick in the crotch. You know, it's like, this is so amazing. It's groundbreaking. It's like, maybe not so much for today's generation, but for us 30-somethings who remember being in the theater in 1977 and seeing this, oh my gosh.
But with Empire, it took everything that was great about A New Hope and gave it depth and gave it passion and gave it a seriousness in that universe for the first time. It's just breathtaking.
Yeah, yeah. Empire was kind of like the Batman Begins of Star Wars. It's like it's grounding it more in reality.
Let's get Kirschner to direct the next Spider-Man flick.
Well, let's get Lawrence Kasdan to write the screenplay. How about that? Let's just get the combo there. This is what happens when George lets someone else write. Thank you.
Write and direct, yes.
Little things. All right. Oh, my gosh. Well, while we're on the Lucas thing, let's talk about Star Wars tidbits, because you dug up some interesting things that even I didn't know about, and I'm a Star Wars fan.
I didn't know about any of these until today, because I haven't been on my computer a lot. But anyway, The Hollywood Reporter was reporting that the highly acclaimed Robot Chicken Star Wars special is going to go ahead and debut its sequel on Adult Swim, and get this, we even have a date, November 16th. And from The Hollywood Reporter, it says, many members of the voice cast from the first special, including original Star Wars actors Carrie Fisher and Billy Dee Williams, will be reprising their roles as Princess Leia and Lando Calrissian, respectively. And also returning as Seth MacFarlane as Emperor Palpatine, Conan O'Brien as Zuckuss, Breckin Meyer as Admiral Ackbar and Boba Fett, and Ahmed Best as Jar Jar Binks. And Seth Green will continue to voice several new characters, including Ponda Baba. And joining the voice cast this time around is Andy Richter. And as for... I know Andy Richter, what? But as for the creative direction for the sequel, they've decided to focus more on the bounty hunters and to explore their stories. So co-creator Matt Senerich says, it's a geek fest for us all.
You know, Ahmed Best has to be, like, loving life, because he voiced and did the motion capture for Jar Jar Binks, the most hated Star Wars character of all time. Yet, he got to reprise the role in this hysterical parody of Robot Chicken doing Star Wars. He's got to be loving life in that respect.
He has to be. And, I mean, not just that. You and I both saw the Robot Chicken special, and it's hilarious. It's amazing. It's funny. It's
And it's on DVD now. Yeah. Yeah. It came out this week. So go buy it. It's like even on sale. Best Buy had it. The opening week price is only $10 with over 2 hours of extras on it.
That is awesome, because I know one thing you and I are always in agreement in is extras on DVDs usually rock.
Yeah. Yeah. They got to make that dollar value to kind of counteract the whole piracy thing and make it worth your time. And they definitely went all out on this one. So, good times indeed. All right, so Robot Chicken sequel. Very cool.
And then, yep, we also have another parody sequel coming, again, highly anticipated, and that's The Family Guy. And the title of the next Family Guy Star Wars parody is Something, Something, Something Dark Side. And that's a running gag in the Family Guy universe there, no pun intended. Yep, that's the sequel we've all been waiting for. There's a sneak preview poster available online. Apparently, it's going out at Comic-Con, and you can go online and check that out. No date, but I'm thinking it's going to kind of come on the heels of the Robot Chicken special like it did last time.
Yeah, now, I know you and I kind of have different opinion on the Family Guy Blue Harvest special. I thought it was great. I think it's on par with the Robot Chicken one. You thought it was kind of weak?
I kind of yawned through it, yeah. I mean, there was nothing really humorous about it to me.
Not even dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Come on, you laughed.
I laughed more at the pot jokes, I think, between R2 and 3PO.
Nice.
Actually, no, no. All right. Lois as Leia recording the message to Obi-Wan. That was pretty funny, too.
Ah, yes. The whole tech support thing.
Yeah. And finally, to totally round out our Star Wars news for this anniversary episode of the Big Ball Broadcast, remember that whole Star Wars in 3D rumor? Well, that damn thing isn't dead yet. ComingSoon.net recently spoke to DreamWorks Animation CEO Jeffrey Katzenberg, and they learned that Lucas is still looking to repurpose the 6 Star Wars episodes into 3D format. So the idea isn't totally off the table with old GL, and who knows, maybe in the next year or two, we'll be enjoying the Star Wars, what do you call that, sexology?
That's a lot of sex.
Sexology. Yeah, in theaters, all in 3D. Pretty
there you
weird.
Go. Yeah, but meanwhile, in just a few weeks, is the Clone Wars, the 3D CG animated that Warner Brothers is actually putting out.
And you know, a lot of newspapers, including some biggies like the LA Times, they're like, wow, this is amazing. Not only is this great, but this is better than anything Lucas has put on celluloid to date. And I'm like, wow, really? That's pretty glowing.
That has to hurt.
But let's just say it piqued my curiosity. It looks pretty badass. You've got Anakin with a Padawan who doesn't make an appearance in any of the actual feature films. So it's like, what happened to that Padawan? I'm very interested in that. The only thing that's a little disappointing is it's the same time period that Genndy Tartakovsky already covered, so I don't know what else new they're going to bring to it, especially with this kind of just being a setup for the ongoing animated series. But, yeah, definitely something that I think has to be enjoyed in theaters. It's Star Wars. It's Star Wars in the theaters. You have to be there for that.
Oh, hell yeah. I might even geek out and bring my Force Effects lightsaber to the theater because I know I won't be the only one.
I just had a vision.
All right, fine. I won't do that, but I will hit on my iPhone the Phone Saber program because it works the same way as the Force Effects lightsaber. You just swish your iPhone around and it makes the lightsaber sounds.
So, you know, let's jump right into that topic. Is it worth the hype? Was it worth standing in line for, you know, 10 days on end?
Well, I didn't stand in line for 10 days, but I'll tell you this. I still, just like I said before, I prefer a real keyboard, but everything else, but it's mainly just the intuitiveness of the apps, which you don't have to have an iPhone to use. You can have an iPod Touch or even an original iPhone to download the apps. These little downloadable small little programs are so friggin' cool. The phone works really, really well. I was a T-Mobile Sidekick user for years. T-Mobile service for me in LA was kind of spotty here and there. There's always predictable dead spots. I haven't really had that many dropped calls here. The signal's been strong. People say I sound good, so the quality of the phone is good because they don't have a aluminum backing on the phone. It actually has a plastic back, so radio signals can penetrate to the antenna a little easier. So the quality of the phone itself is like vastly improved over the first version, apparently. I didn't own the original iPhone. But it depends on your disposition. If you like standing in line for hours for a friggin' phone and being made fun of, and maybe you'll get to wave hi to a TV camera or something and be on the late night news. I don't know. I got into it for a while. My problem is I stood in line on launch day for 7 hours, and there were activation issues on the AT&T and Apple end that were slowing down activation to a crawl, where one person could only activate within maybe an average of 30 minutes. You've got hundreds of people in line, but only a handful actually left the store with the phone activated. So I actually had to leave the first day. After 7 hours, standing on my feet, oh man, I was pissed. I had to leave because I had a scheduled video game session. I had to leave, go record. I got up early the next day, stood in line for 2 hours at an AT&T store, got the phone. I get home, and the ringer, the speaker, went out within 2 hours. I started programming all my phone numbers in, and the speaker quit working. So I got a replacement one. That came 3 days later. Knock on wood, nothing has gone wrong with the phone ever since. I love this phone. Love it, love it, love it. It is the coolest thing I've ever had in terms of cell phone technology. I think it is totally awesome, and I totally recommend it to anyone who is thinking about getting it, or if you're nearing the end of your contract because you don't want to get dinged with, you know, breaking your contract with whoever it is. I myself didn't care. I was saving money for this 3G version of the iPhone for months, so I said, all right, I got to pay $200 to get out of the contract. And then I got to join this new service. And yeah, the service costs more too, unfortunately. You're paying more per month because of the 3G coverage. 3G, though, as cool as it is and as fast as it is on the phone, is a huge battery suck. So you will need a car charger to make it through the day or be near your wall adapter because that thing will just drain. You can physically turn off the 3G. And you can turn off Wi-Fi. You can turn down the brightness. You can do all these battery conservation tips and to squeeze some more battery life out of it. I haven't found the battery life to be near what Steve Jobs was claiming it was going to be. But then again, I'm on the phone constantly, always clicking around or listening to podcasts. These programs, these apps, they're killer. You can download streaming radio, AOL Radio, for example. It's free. You download it to the iPhone. Takes like 10 seconds, 20 seconds, and then suddenly you can listen to streaming versions of your favorite radio stations from anywhere in the country. So I'm listening to my favorite FM talk station from Dallas all the way over here in LA, and it's streaming. It sounds really good over a 3G or a Wi-Fi connection. Sounds really good. Pandora Radio is another one where you can type in the name of an artist, and it will create a virtual radio station for you. And that is just worth it right there. And, of course, the phone saver program, you know, being able to swoosh your phone around with lightsabers. It's so pointless and so cool simultaneously. I love it. So, Steve, you got to get an iPhone, buddy.
Oh, gee, I don't know how much time I have left on my T-Mo contract here. And, yeah, you know, as silly as it may sound, the one point that's keeping me from getting one is the fact that on my Sidekick I have that tactile full keyboard.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got to admit, I'm making more typos now than ever before. And it's really discouraging because it's slowing down my typing. Now, it is an intuitive learning keyboard. It will remember your mistakes. And then a little window will pop up above what you're typing because it's trying to predict what they think you're trying to type. And it starts remembering your typing patterns. That part's cool. But some things you're trying to type, you don't want it to remember the wrong thing because you want to spell a word wrong on purpose. You want to write yeah instead of yes and not have it corrected or whatever. Or you're writing some slang word and it keeps correcting it to something completely different. That's very frustrating. And I'm a texting fiend. I'm texting back and forth all day with friends. And then I'll hit send and then realize that it auto-corrected to something completely different than I intended. I'm like, ah, crap.
Have you been able to try anything like AIM or any other instant message programs on it?
AIM works well, pretty well. It is a little buggy. A lot of other people have had more issues with it than I have. It is a pretty good interface. I think the problem, though, you can't open links. People have posted links to me in AIM conversations, and I haven't been able to, like, you know, touch screen that and have it open an internet browser. It wouldn't do that. So that is a problem. There is no copy-paste feature in this. That is a big check mark against the iPhone. The GPS apparently works pretty well. It doesn't give you turn-by-turn navigation as well as a GPS device would, but it does use Google Maps, and I was driving down the street, turned it on, and it tracked me pretty damn accurately. So as long as you have a good signal on the Edge network or the 3G network, it will track you really well. And it's really cool. I love it.
On a total unrelated side note, for Father's Day, I got my first Father's Day. I got a Garmin Nuvi, and I've been digging that thing. It's pretty badass.
Yeah, I got a TomTom a few months ago, and it's really cool. It was like $300 because I had to have widescreen. I'm just a geek that way. I had to spend the extra $100 for friggin' widescreen. How stupid am I? But yeah. No, I mean, the thing works great.
And I was going to say about the iPhone, I guess the positive in the plus column is the price point compared to the first generation iPhone.
Yeah, we're talking $200 for an 8 gig. Come on, that's stellar. That's so much cheaper than the first version. Now people, of course, the iPhone 1 users are trying to unload them in droves so they can get the new iPhone 3G. And a lot of people who are interested in the iPhone are kind of saying, hey, I just want an iPhone. I'll take the first version because you can get those mega cheap now. Like probably on eBay, you could just make a killing. Remember how the lines wrapped around the building to get that iPhone. And now people are just, you know, going eBay crazy with them.
And of course, again, one of the greatest parts of, in that is that the software is available for you to jailbreak the first gen iPhones and actually run it on the T-Mobile network. So, you know where my mind is going on that one.
Ah, yes, I do. And they've come up with a lot of jailbreak programs out there that it's not going to break the phone. It's not going to brick the phone, rather. It's not going to make it just completely useless as soon as you get like an update or anything. The only downside I've heard is you can't use the visual voicemail. That's another feature that I think is totally badass on the iPhone. You can go to the visual voicemail screen and pick the order of the voicemail and click on it as if it were a file on your desktop. So you don't have to sit there and wait and listen through 7 messages to get to the one that you wanted to listen to. You can listen to them in any order you want and then delete or call the person back. It's all there on a very user-friendly interface. I can't say enough about it. The iPhone, I'm a big convert. I got to say, this is an awesome little gadget.
Yeah, but you're a gadget whore, early adopter anyway, so.
Yes, but I held out this long, didn't I? I didn't get the first iPhone.
I'll tell you, Becca and I did discuss that during dinner this evening. I said, well, I got to give Kyle credit because he didn't drop the $600 on a first gen.
That's right. And, you know, those people who did are just kicking themselves because now they'd be lucky if they can sell that first one for even a third of that.
Yes, extremely lucky. When you can buy a new one for a third of that.
Yeah. Now, all the iPod Touch fans out there are going, wait a minute, When's the cool new iPod Touch going to come out?
Probably soon. We know Apple. We know Steve Jobs. It'll happen.
Just I've already heard rumbles that there'll be a 32-gig iPhone by Christmas, and that's what I honestly wanted this time because I was spoiled by having a 30-gig video iPod. I never used it for videos, but you know that's the fifth-generation iPod. I got spoiled having that much room, and I thought, well, if I'm going to spend $300, you know, I want to have that much room. And now this is flash-based memory on the iPhone, so it doesn't take as much, you know, it's not as bulky. Come Christmas or come the 32-gig, I'll probably be selling my 16-gig, just like an idiot that I am.
And carry your backpack full of gadgets as you go hiking across the vast Los Angeles wilderness.
Well, I may have a big eBay sale or Craigslist sale. Who knows?
I'm waiting for the killer phone slash, you know, iPod slash video pod bat slash everything, you know, so I don't have to leave the house with 5 gadgets in my hand. You know, do I have my iPod? Do I have my phone? Do I have this? Do I have that? You know, when it's all in one, that's probably when I'll finally adopt.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, I know you're all about listening to your MP3s, burning them all to one CD, listening in your car. But if you can carry that all with you on one device and call somebody and check the weather and, you know, whatever, I mean, all these multitask things that these awesome applications do, you're going to love life.
I check the weather in real time. I roll down my window. I stick my arm out, you know.
Okay,
talk about
fine.
A free app.
Yeah, boy, well, we like that.
Pulled this from Anime News Network. They point out that IF Magazine has learned that producer Irwin Stoff is developing an adaptation of one of America's favorite anime series, Cowboy Bebop. And he says, quote, I'm developing Cowboy Bebop for Fox, but doing it as a live-action film, so I'm working on that at the moment. I'm really excited to be working on it, and it's in the early stages. We just signed it the other day. He goes on to say, I have such an enormous admiration for its creators, that our first and foremost concern is going to be a real degree of faithfulness to the tone of the movie, to the mix of the genre, so on and so forth. When I met with them in Japan, one of the first things that I brought up was the experience we had with The Scanner Darkly and how hard we worked to remain faithful to Philip K. Dick, and that was our big concern here. So, don't know. Personally, I'm still kind of on the fence. Don't forget, they're also still talking about still doing the westernized adaptation of Akira, so on the heels of the Dragon Ball movie, no less. I hope this isn't Hollywood's new genre to really exploit, you know?
Hollywood has to be shaking in their boots just a little bit because of the box office bombing of Speed Racer.
I even forgot that came out, to be honest with you.
See, like, oh, yeah, wait, see how bad of a bomb it was?
Yeah, I mean, me myself, I'm an anime fan, and for some reason I've never really considered Speed Racer anime. It's like pre-when anime got really cool anime.
I'm just thinking, wow, Cowboy Bebop, they're going to take something so awesome an anime that you would show people who don't like anime, because the story, the characters are so amazing. And then I'm suddenly envisioning live action. Let's see who, Clive Owen as Spike Spiegel, Angelina Jolie as Faye Valentine. What's going to happen?
Yeah. I think the way Hollywood's making a movie now is they look at properties that have that broad appeal and that box office potential and don't weigh the odds. They go, hey, you know, the hell, it made, you know, tons of money in Japan and ran constantly on Cartoon Network and all these, you know, rave reviews. Let's make a movie out of it. Nobody's really thinking about the whole passion behind it, the reason it was made and the reason it was made the way it was.
Yeah, integrity maybe. You know, yeah, I've heard even Viz is wanting to shop around doing a live action like Bleach or Naruto. They've had, you know, tremendous success with Death Note because it's been a successful manga, a successful anime, and a successful live-action movie series.
Yeah, they're up to, like, what, the third one now?
Yeah.
I don't know, though. To me, it kind of seems like an instance of lightning striking on, like, the Death Note franchise, where that's the lucky one. You know, we've said it before. We pretty much already know what to anticipate from the Dragon Ball movie. And if you're going to make an anime movie that's going to kind of warm both Hollywood and the public to slamming us constantly with the whole genre of anime movies, Dragon Ball should be a phenomenal film. It should be the Batman of the anime franchise. It should be the one that really stands out and blows you away. But Dragon Ball is going to come out and it's going to fail. It's going to fail miserably. I'm going to put it somewhere in the same category as Speed Racer. And this is just from the early set pictures that I'm seeing. I can't imagine this thing, you know, in actual moving frames. But then with Bebop and Akira, which are just, you know, up on their own pedestals and for their own rights, to come along with that, I think it's going to just leave a bad taste in everybody's mouth.
Yeah, and what are you guys' thoughts? What do you think about all this? Drop us a line or an MP3 comment. Just record yourself and send that to thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear your feedback on this story or any of our stories. You can also submit stories. We'll credit you. Just tell us, give us a link where you got it from, of course. We like to investigate things. Or if it's just an out-and-out rumor, feel free to state that as well. So, yeah, we're going to wrap up this this show here with a list. Yes, another list of upcoming movie sequels you didn't know about. I'll have to admit that some of these movies I had no idea about, and I'm a pretty hardcore film geek.
Very wacky. Just as wacky as iRobot 2. And this one, as far as we know, is still in the scripting stages with a potential 2010 release. And right now there's no news on Mr. Smith's involvement, but disturbing nonetheless.
Yeah, and speaking of Will Smith, how about this one? In development, I Am Legend 2. I'm not going to get spoilerific here, but I'd really like to see Will Smith. What? How would that be possible? How could they bring Will Smith back to this?
A la Resident Evil, I'm sure. Speaking of franchises that should be dead, Beverly Hills Cop 4. And, you know, I guess this is all because of the fact that Die Hard's still going on. And I don't know. There's no real further news other than the fact that it's not stopped in development and work is going ahead.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously Disney has dollar signs in their eyes for National Treasure 3. Not a huge surprise because the first two made a buttload of movies. So look for this third movie in the series to come out in 2011.
Ain't it cool news? Is heard some rumbles that Pixar is planning the sequel to Cars 2. Now, they call it Disney's weakest film, but apparently it's enough to warrant a sequel.
I couldn't agree more. That that is the weakest Pixar movie. I saw WALL-E. WALL-E was really good. I don't think it's as great as everyone says it is, but it was a lot better than Cars. Green lighting, pardon the pun, Cars 2, I don't know. I'd much rather see a Toy Story 3 long before that.
And ironically, that's the next one on the list, Toy Story 3. And I guess early speculation with this film was to be straight to DVD, and really, that's not going the way it's going to be. And Tom Hanks and Tim Allen are both expected to be back on voicing duties, and that's planning theatrical release in 2010.
Now, MGM is interested in reviving this series, Jeepers Creepers. A lot of people rolling their eyes. I actually really love the first one. Why? Because it kind of pays a tribute to the 1950s horror movie, and it's got a kind of modern edge to it, but it also has an old school kind of feel to it, too. The second one sucked ass. It was terrible. But writer-director Vic DeSalva is still attached to this one, so we'll see if he can reinvigorate this horror series.
And speaking of horrors, Shrek 5, and all I can say about that is, no real wonder Shrek's the same color as the American dollar.
Yeah, we haven't seen 4 yet, but you know 4 is coming, so might as well see a 5. We got news about Night at the Museum 2. Yeah, and this was Ben Stiller's most commercially successful role outside of Meet the Parents. So, yeah, no news on the proposed Meet the Little Fokker, though.
How about Crank 2 High Voltage? This is more like it. Crank is a guilty pleasure right up there with Snakes on a Plane, and it's coming back for more. And apparently shooting's starting next month for a 2009 release. That's pretty scary.
This is actually the only film I've seen of Jason Statham. I love it. Crank is awesome. It is, like, campy fun. I don't know how he's coming back in this movie. Again, avoiding spoilers. But I might actually see that one in the theater because I enjoyed the first one so much. So go figure. Yeah, speaking of Statham, he's going to be back for Transporter 3, already in pre-production, assuming that he'll go straight from shooting Crank 2 to this.
And who could forget Super Troopers? Well, how about Super Troopers 2, the sequel nobody asked for? Now, you can expect this one in 2010, where as far as we know, it's still in the early stages.
I didn't ask for it. I saw the first one. My friend told me it was just jaw-droppingly funny, and I just kind of sat there and smirked. I'm certainly not asking for it, but to each their own. Sony made a buttload of movie on Silent Hill, and they're, of course, in development for a sequel. 2010 is the current slated release date. That is a movie that I thought had a really nice visual style, nice atmosphere, but that's about it. Once it turned into a big Burn the Witch that kind of movie, I'm like, oh, please, boring.
The Descent 2. Now, word has it that Neil Marshall won't be directing this one, but he'll be attached as the executive producer. John Harris is stepping behind the camera, as he did with the most recent Stardust.
Now, I love the first Descent because it's really, really cool about these chick cave explorers that go down, they get lost, and then they run into a bunch of cave-dwelling mutants. It's actually really well done. The sequel, I have no hopes for because it just reeks of Hollywood going, we're going to make money, and we're not going to have the same guy do it. Neil Marshall went from the first film to direct Doomsday, which came out a few months ago and totally flopped. It was trying to be like an 80s Escape from New York meets The Road Warrior and totally failed. I haven't seen it, but I'm interested to see if you can make an 80s movie in 2008 and have it work.
And one that will probably work, despite all the warnings, is Ice Age 3. And I guess July 1st, 2009 is the date you'll need to avoid if you want to miss this next Ice Age movie. Hopefully it's better than the second one.
I haven't seen the first or the second one, but I know they made a lot of money.
Lucky you.
I guess so. I did, however, see Ghost Rider. That was, I want my money back. So, but it made money for Marvel. So there you go. Looking at a tentative release for next year for Ghost Rider 2.
And The Untouchables, Capone Rising, which is going to be a prequel to Brian De Palma's cracking prohibition thriller of 20 years ago. And De Palma's back behind the camera, and the project is in the pre-production stages now.
Can you say another sequel no one asked for? Punisher Warzone, okay? It's not going to be Thomas Jane again. It's going to be Ray Stevenson. He's actually become the third person to play the Punisher on screen, the first one being Dolph Lundgren. You will find out how Ray Stevenson performs as the Punisher on September 12th of this year.
Starship Troopers 3 Marauder. Caster Van Diem is back. This one's going straight to DVD as the piss-awful second film did, and that's due out later this year.
And how about who's holding their breath for War of the Worlds 2 The Next Wave? It's going straight to DVD. That's always a good sign. And it's directed by the star of Soul Man and The Hitcher, the original, C. Thomas Howell.
I thought you'd want to tackle this one, Ace Ventura 3, with no Jim Carrey and no chance of seeing it in the cinema. This one's going straight to DVD later this year.
Gosh, I don't know. The second one was so good, and it had Jim Carrey. That's sarcasm, by the way. Jurassic Park 4, we've talked about this before with that rumored plot involving using dinosaurs as military weapons and such, and I think Hollywood kind of heard the balking of the fans and have decided to scrap that screenplay, thank God. But apparently Laura Dern is still attached, you know, the cute blonde chick. Hopefully they're gearing for a release for next year, although production hadn't started yet, so it'll expect that to be delayed.
And running out the list, this one probably, you know, goes without saying, Scary Movie 5 and Saw 5. You know, we could have all guessed at these, and they should both see the light by the end of this year.
Isn't that unfortunate? I mean, oh, exciting! Great, awesome. Well, I guess we're out of content, finally.
Finally! No, you make it sound like I don't like doing this podcast.
Oh, but it's been so long. We should probably address that. Yeah, we have been very, very busy, folks, so we apologize for the long lapse between episodes. We will still continue to try and endeavor to record whenever we can. We can't really adapt to any set schedule, but we appreciate you guys downloading the show and sharing it with your friends and letting people know. And make sure and give us feedback, because we love to hear it, read it, and, of course, mention it on the air here at thebigbaldbroadcast@gmail.com. So stay tuned for all the various ways you can also get in touch with our show. And Maria will tell you about that in the end credits here. So I guess until next time, this is Kyle Hebert.
And this is Other World Steve.
See ya!
Visit our official blog page at bigbaldbroadcast.blogspot.com. Donations are graciously accepted and appreciated. Please email us at thebigbaldbroadcast@gmail.com. Additional announcements by Maria Vu. Remember to stay geeky!
That was good!